are listening to a free version of The Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Steeter.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
Ever get the feeling you've been cheated?
It is Wednesday, February 26, 2014. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the three-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times, the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, Jody Griffin, staff attorney at Public Knowledge, on the Comcast, or the potential Comcast acquisition of Time Warner, the recent attempts by the FCC to create a net neutrality regime, and how that Netflix deal with Comcast may implicate it. Also on the program today, yes, folks, the swan song for Chris Christie's presidential ambitions. And it turns out getting rid of the cuts to Social Security via the chain CPI a good idea, if these latest Republican attacks are any measure. Obesity down in toddlers significantly. Meanwhile, 4 million people have enrolled in Obamacare. Doesn't include Medicaid. Doesn't include the 3 million under age of 26-year-old young people who are on their parents' plan. We'll get to that Scott Brown story. We didn't get to it yesterday. Eugene Merman has his petition about Uganda pulled from the We the People site. He puts up another. Senate probe showing that the Justice Department has done very little to find those people hiding their money in Swiss bank accounts. And finally, the heartwarming story of an Exxon CEO who has seen the light when it comes to fracking. But the light is very narrow. It's very contained and localized. It's a local light, as it were. So he hasn't had his coming to Jesus moment. It's more like coming to the 14th or 15th apostle, maybe. The one whose name you don't even know. Bill.
Yeah.
Pastor. His come to Bill moment, maybe. I don't know.
Pastor Bill.
Yeah, all that and more on today's program. Folks, let me start just 2 points. I got this email, and I want to just deal with this right now. It's from listener Joel. Sam, I really enjoy your show, but I feel like you don't like your kids. Obviously, Joel listens to the funner half of the program, where occasionally I will...
Listens faithfully.
Yes, I will discuss my brood. You complain about Saul a lot. This, of course, is my, almost one-year-old. A couple of weeks away. I understand. I have 3 children. But I don't complain about them to others. Of course, I don't have the same media outlet either. Now, I'm not obliged to complain about my children, and let me just set the record straight. When you say, I feel you don't like your kids, I like Milo, and I like Saul. I will say, Saul is incredibly lazy. He hangs out in the apartment all day, doesn't do anything. He barely walks around. Almost not at all. I'm just saying, trying to light a fire under this kid. That's all. So So I make them listen to the show, and that's the best way to do it. It's sort of like a bank shot. I want to encourage him to just pick up the pace a little bit. Meanwhile, also, we have a link on our site at majority.fm. Progressives United is asking their New York members, if you are a New York member of Progressives United, or a New Yorker for that matter, New York Stater, you can go to this link. They will connect you directly to Governor Cuomo's office and tell him you want him to keep his promise to push for public financing in New York State. This is not just a New York State issue, but this is open only to New York State residents. It is so important that New York lead the way in these type of things. We have a real problem in this country with money dominating our politics. And this is not the be-all, catch-all to reverse that trend, but it helps. And it was one of his big campaign promises upon his election, and he should be held to it. I mean, my feelings of Governor Cuomo, I think, are well known on this program. He's his policies, frankly, are on the social questions. He's doing well, but when it comes to the major economic questions, things like austerity, things like taxing the rich, universal pre-K, etc., he's really fallen down on the job. You got to send a message to him because this is a guy who wants to run for president. So check it out. We've got it on the site at majority.fm. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Jody Griffin. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It's a pleasure to welcome to the program Jody Griffin. She is the staff attorney at the senior staff attorney at Public Knowledge. Welcome to the program, Jody.
Thanks for having me.
So, Jody, I give us now, I think by now most people are aware that Comcast is seeking to purchase Time Warner Cable. Just give us a sense of what the basics of how this deal would work and what the implications would be.
Okay, well, as you said, Comcast and Time Warner Cable are two cable companies, and Comcast is proposing to buy Time Warner. This is a deal that would need to be approved by the FCC and would also be examined by the Department of Justice under antitrust laws. And for a public knowledge's standpoint, we're a consumer advocacy group, so we're opposed to this merger, not only because it will only lead to higher prices and fewer choices for consumers, but because of the effect the merger would have on the rest of the media marketplace because of the combined Comcast-Time Warner Cable companies leverage over content creators and other internet companies.
So now, if Comcast were to purchase Time Warner Cable, it would have essentially 30 million subscribers. Is that right?
Based on the reports that we've seen so far, it seems those are about the numbers we're looking at. Comcast will have to file more detailed numbers as part of its application to the Federal Communications Commission, so we can get more specific then.
Yeah, okay. So let's go through the different types of problems this is going to represent. I mean, you know, at first blush, it seems to me this is crazy. You know, more consolidation in this market seems like exactly the wrong direction we should be headed in. But walk us through what the different types of problems, because this is actually a problem on sort of both ends of this, right? Both from a sort of a monopoly perspective and and I never can pronounce this right, but a monopsony standpoint.
That's right. Yep.
So walk us through the monopoly part.
Sure. So, and part of the problem here is that from the consumer's perspective, the cable market is already extremely concentrated, and a lot of customers only have the choice of one cable provider, maybe two sometimes, but it's already extremely concentrated. And from the other side of the market, when a content creator needs to reach a Comcast customer, they have to go through Comcast pipes at some point. You know, there has to be some way they get their data over Comcast network in order to reach a Comcast subscriber. So that gives Comcast a lot of leverage over those content creators. And there's not a lot of choice for a customer to bypass that fact because they don't have other choices for broadband subscriptions. As you mentioned, because of these monopoly problems in many local markets.
All right. Well, so let's take it first with just the pure cable aspect of this. One of the problems, as I understand it, I think it goes without saying from a cable standpoint, it's rather problematic to have only one option for a cable provider as a customer. Because you have nowhere else to go. It's incredibly anti-competitive.
Right, yeah. And that, you know, it means that customers don't really have a lot of choices. And we kind of see now, we look at reports about customer satisfaction rates over many industries, and internet service providers are routinely at the very bottom of customer satisfaction rates. And part of the reason is that there's so little competition in the market, there's really no incentive for Comcast or other ISPs to look at how can we make the consumer experience better or to pass on any cost savings that they get onto their customers, because where else are the customers going to go? You know, there's not a lot of adequate substitutes. Comcast likes to point to wireless options like satellite or even mobile LTE technologies, but at this point, those are just a far cry from a wireline broadband subscription. So from the consumer's perspective, there's really no replacement yet. I'd love it if someday there was, but right now you're kind of stuck with the one or two options that you have in the wireline market.
And on the flip side of this, if I want to start a new network, a new cable network, I need to have basically a basic minimum of carriage across the country, right? And so in one of the opportunities I have for that is that there's multiple cable providers. And so if I was to go to, maybe I can get on Charter, maybe I can get on Comcast, maybe I can get on Time Warner. If I get any one of those three or other cable providers, I can start to build the value of the network because I can reach that many more homes. If we consolidate it here and we have only basically, well, we have one massive buyer, if that buyer says no, I really have no ability to launch a new network.
Right. Yeah. For any video programming provider, whether you're going over traditional cable packages or over online video, if Comcast has, you know, somewhere around maybe 30 million homes and they say no to you, then it's really hard to sustain a national business model then. And those companies can ultimately go out of business, which would mean that there are fewer choices for consumers. And sometimes we've seen in the cable market specifically reports that Comcast will ask independent video programmers to give up things like online video rights as part of the conditions of getting carried on Comcast Network, which then stifles this burgeoning online video market that promises to be really positive to consumers, but only if it can get off the ground, which Comcast seems to be trying to stop. It's hard to get a lot of details about this issue, though, because the deals are always very secret.
Right. All right. So give us a sense of what the DOJ will look at and how that's different from what the FCC will look at in their determining whether or not they will approve of this. Now, and let me just start with asking you, can either one of those entities basically quash this?
Well, they can in different ways. So the Department of Justice, they're going to be looking purely at the competition aspects of this deal through the antitrust laws. So they'll be looking at how much extra power does Comcast get as a consequence of this merger specifically. It's in ways a more narrow inquiry. And if they decide that it's a terrible deal and needs to be blocked, then what they can do is they can sue effectively Comcast for violating the antitrust laws in court. So that's not technically blocking it on its own, although that litigation tends to be very burdensome and expensive. So a lot of times once the DOJ sues, companies will fold or will agree to different conditions because they just don't want to get into the litigation. On the other side, the FCC,
all right, let me just ask you one more question about the DOJ. Will sure. they contemplate the notion that Comcast is not also has holdings in terms of producing content? In other words, how limited do they look at this in terms of competition? Is it simply we're just looking at this from the perspective of these are content delivery, they have pipes, but Comcast also has a lot of holdings when it comes to what flows through those pipes as well. Do they contemplate all of those things?
Yes, I expect that they will. They can be very thorough in figuring out what are these companies, what are their different holdings, and therefore what are their motivations to quash competition from new market entrants. So the fact that Comcast has its own interest in content services through NBCU or through Universal, which is a movie studio, that's going to be very relevant when it comes to figuring out what are Comcast's motivations to stop new online video services in particular.
And so just give me your take as an attorney. I mean, like, based upon what you know about the Department of Justice and we now have some experience with this this Attorney General and the DOJ on these issues. Based upon what you know of the holdings that Comcast has, what do you think the chances are that they will actually, how they will find whether or not this is anti-competitive?
It's hard to speculate on how it's ultimately going to come out, but I think that they're going to have a really strong case in front of them that this is a terrible deal for consumers. And so I think that they could file a suit to oppose the merger. We have seen the Department of Justice looking into the online video space, and we know that this is an area that they're interested in and that they're watching closely. So I'm hopeful that they will understand all of the nuances and intricacies of this proposed merger.
Do they take public comments? Do they take briefs? I mean, or is this simply a closed door type of investigation?
They will not have a public docket the way that the FCC does, but they, will take comments from anybody. But it's a little bit less transparent than the FCC is proceeding, in part because what the Department of Justice is doing is that they're building a case for litigation, as opposed to the Federal Communications Commission that's trying to build a public record on which they can base their ultimate decision as a federal agency.
Do you get a sense, at least on the DOJ side, the I guess the antitrust side, are there big industry players who will be where are the big industry players in terms of the way they perceive this? In other words, is this something that Viacom may have an issue with, do you have a sense of that?
Well, it's hard to say who exactly is going to speak out, but I think that the content providers should be concerned. I expect they are, but are probably still thinking about what their action's going to look like. But yeah, I would think that content creators that are not affiliated with Comcast or Time Warner will probably be concerned, and online video companies will be concerned, and basically any independent distribution companies will probably want to express their concerns in some way. What that looks like, I think, remains to be seen.
Okay, well, so let's move over to the FCC. From what perspective, how do they judge whether or not they would allow this, and how would they go about? It wouldn't be a question of litigation, right? It would simply be a question of approval, or how does it work with the FCC?
Yeah, so the FCC, they're going to be reviewing, or they have to give approval for this deal to go through, because Time Warner Cable has spectrum. They have licenses as part of their cable infrastructure that need to be approved in order to be moved over to Comcast. And Time Warner Cable is actually also a phone company, so they have licenses that authorize them to give phone service in certain markets. So the FCC, again, needs to approve the deal in order to allow those licenses to switch over to Comcast. So because of that, it's not a matter of blocking the deal it's not a matter of suing to block the deal for the FCC, but rather they have to give their explicit approval in order for it to happen. And they're going to be looking at the deal under a public interest standard that examines whether this serves the public's convenience and necessity, and whether it ultimately serves the public interest, which is a very broad standard. It allows them to look at things like the overall market power and leverage of Comcast beyond just specific anti-competition effects. So I think that we're going to see a lot more issues coming in the FCC docket, because the applicants, Comcast and Time Warner, have a much higher standard to show in order to get what they want.
And so what are those issues? I imagine the innovation, connectivity, how broad and sort of how deep, I guess, the network runs?
Yeah, I think that they'll, similar to the DOJ, I think they're going to be looking at all of the vertically integrated elements of Comcast. So they're going to be looking at the fact that it owns content, it owns broadband, it owns cable. I think they're going to be thinking about what the combined entity means for the industry as a whole in a broader sense than just whether Comcast has more anti-competitive power than it did before. Because it's a broader standard, the FCC can think about things like, after Comcast buys Time Warner Cable, it's going to be this giant in the marketplace, and that means not just that it's going to have market leverage to stop new entrants, which it will, but in addition to that, it's going to have a say over what the future of our communications platforms are in a way that's really unique compared to all the other companies, because it will be so much bigger and it will control so many more markets. I think that that's something that's really going to worry the FCC, because they're going to be thinking more broadly about what's the future of the broadband market, of the cable market, and is it going in a place that's ultimately serving the public interest, and does this merger help it reach that point, or does it hinder that goal? And obviously, for public knowledge, we're pointing out that it pretty clearly hinders that goal.
When the FCC contemplates this, do they sit around and they say, this is sort of embarrassing? In France, For instance, you know, speeds are five times greater and bills are, I don't know, half or a third of what they are in this country. I mean, do they contemplate that? I mean, is that on the agenda explicitly, this notion that, you know, there's going to be less of an incentive for Comcast to upgrade its hardware, you know, or that, you know, we're not going to get things like maybe fiber rolled out in this instance?
I think they're definitely, you know, they've definitely been paying attention to the state of our broadband infrastructure and in some cases how it compares to other countries. And also this kind of broader point of even in cases where, you know, well, first of all, the U.S. is kind of in a shamefully low position in terms of broadband build-out and broadband speeds, considering that this is technology that came from the U.S. and now we're falling well behind. But even for the countries where we are ahead of them, there's this point of, you know, this isn't just a game. This isn't something where knowing that we tried hard enough is good enough. You know, we need to see results. We want our broadband infrastructure to be forward-looking. We want it to be future-proof. We want it to be as fast and as robust as possible. And regardless of what's going on in any other country, that needs to be our goal.
And so I assume the FCC will have hearings and an open comment period?
Well, the FCC will first, they'll receive the application from Comcast and Time Warner, and they'll put that out publicly, and they'll probably open a new docket where you can receive comments and reply comments. And anybody can submit comments online. There will probably be more detailed technical filings from groups like Public Knowledge and other companies. And there will be probably a lot of filings just from average users who say, hey, I'm really worried about this because this is going to affect my cable bill or my choices in the market. And I think all kinds of comments are going to be useful to the FCC, not just the expert ones, but also from the everyday Americans who are going to be impacted by this merger.
Will we see any hearings in Congress about this?
I expect we will. I think that they're looking at it closely, and I think that they're probably going to have a hearing on it.
Okay, and so let's turn to net neutrality and where we are on this. A couple of months ago, a federal court basically struck down the FCC's, scheme in which to impose net neutrality on our broadband, and this was a function of the SEC, failing a couple of years ago to reclassify internet providers as common carriers, something called Title II, which had been reversed during the Bush administration. And they used Section 706 to derive their authority to which just explain to us that. What does Section 06 do, and why is that not as effective as reclassifying the internet providers as common carriers?
Sure. So Section 706 is part of the Communications Act and thus part of the governing laws that the FCC operates under. And what it says is that the FCC has broad authority over broadband to promote build-out, to promote competition, but the FCC cannot impose rules on broadband build-out under 706 that are akin to common carrier regulations. So we think of like the phone network specifically. So under 706, the FCC has a lot of authority, but it can't do specific things, at least according to the D.C. Circuit, like imposing a no-blocking rule or a non-discrimination rule, at least not in the form that the FCC's rules existed up until this opinion came out. Importantly, though, the FCC has the option of saying, you know, this really isn't an information service that would be governed under Section 706. Rather, it's a telecommunications service, more like the phone network, that's governed under Title II of the Act, and that does include rules like you have to access all the other networks, you have to let them access yours at reasonable rates, and it's going to look at things like non-discrimination with a much more skeptical eye. So what the FCC is doing now is thinking, okay, so the authority that we were given to promote these net neutrality rules, open internet rules, did not pass muster under the DC circuit for the specific rules that we passed. So now, what new rules can we structure, either under Section 706 or Title II or some other source of authority in the Communications Act, that achieves an open internet? So right now, they've put out a notice for public comment saying, basically, what should we do next? And I think we're going to get a lot of responses from people all over the industry and from lots of consumer groups. And the answers will probably be, you know, all over the map, because this is a really large, overarching question about what the future of the FCC's authority and rules will be, not just for net neutrality specifically, but also for things like interconnection between the networks, which kind of goes a little deeper into the internet's network than what we would traditionally think of as net neutrality.
So, I mean, isn't this, I mean, this seems incredibly, I don't know what the adjective is, Ruby and Goldbergian to me. I mean, so essentially what they're trying to do is figure out how under Section 706, their 706 authority, they can get to the same place they would get to if they reclassified the internet providers as common carriers without using any of the same structure that is involved in that classification. So in other words, they're trying to get to the same place, but they have to take a completely different route in getting there. Is it possible?
Well, so from public knowledge's perspective, we're saying, you know, we're skeptical that this is really going, that Section 706 is really going to get you where you need to go and where you say you want to go. So the straightforward answer that gets you everything you want is to just say, you know, this is a telecommunications service, which, by the way, just makes sense. So telecom services are services that just transfer data to and from, doesn't change things, doesn't process things, it just moves things from one point in the network to another. That's basically what internet access service is, after all. So we think that this makes sense just as a matter of putting internet access service under the right definition, and also as a matter of policy. You know, it gets us things like open internet rules, and it gives the FCC very clear authority to look into things like interconnection between the networks to make sure that ultimately this network is still serving the users first and foremost.
Let me ask you this. Have you seen any, I mean, is there anybody out there that you're aware of that has even been able to sort of crack this nut? I mean, are there academics somewhere or legal experts somewhere writing a theoretical framework where this could happen? Because, I mean, otherwise it just seems like this is just pure naked politics. Is that what it is?
I think a lot of it is, you know, a lot of the trepidation around Title II is that, particularly in Washington, D.C., which is where we're all operating, there's a fear that that will be construed as taking over the internet, and therefore is kind of this political bomb that nobody wants to step on. But actually, you know, we're just talking about the access component, the pipes. You know, Title II actually makes it very clear that you're only talking about how to access the network, not about any of the content that goes over it. You know, much like our conversations over the phone are not regulated by the FCC, but rather just the prices and the networks that get us phone service are regulated by the FCC.
Well, I mean, so when you say that there's this fear that this is going to be perceived as some type of government takeover of the internet, isn't that really just like a fig leaf for there's so much money involved in this business that they have basically are are purchasing in one form or another enough lawmakers who are putting pressure on the FCC to basically say, we don't want you to really effectively regulate this aspect of it?
Well, the largest telcos are certainly pressing the FCC and Congress and all the relevant policymakers very hardly, and they have, you know, very extensive and very sophisticated lobbying shops that argue that point, you know, which is why there are consumer groups like Public Knowledge and others that have specifically based themselves in D.C. so that we can be here and give another voice to the FCC and other agencies saying, we know that you hear a lot from these big telecom companies, but they're not the only voice in this debate. And in fact, they shouldn't even be the most important one, because after all, at the end of the day, the question is whether the network's serving the user.
Yeah, I mean, there's nobody in Washington who's anticipating a massive march on Washington over the idea that somehow internet providers would be classified classified as Title II common carriers, right? I mean, when we say there's these politics, it's really just there's just money. There's just we're just seeing industry versus the rest of us.
Yeah, I think in general the threat is whether this would be misconstrued as something that could turn into a political soundbite. I don't think that, as you say, there's not going to be any march saying that the everyday American out there is outraged that the FCC thinks this is a Title II common telecommunications service instead of a Title I information service. That's not something that's going to happen. But we do see sometimes that issues that are relatively small and relatively technical kind of get blown out of proportion, particularly when elections are coming up. And there's a fear that issues could be hijacked in a broader realm that isn't actually an accurate representation of the debate that's happening at the FCC, but nevertheless could have a political impact.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I feel like I could spend the rest of my life trying to imagine how that would turn into a hot potato political issue outside of just simply, sort of money, industry money. And I can't imagine. I can never in a million years imagine any politician saying, you know, what's going on with the classification of internet providers as common carriers is just an outrage. Although I think we're going to see the opposite on some level, because that's where the consumers are going to feel it. And so let me ask you this, relative to that question, what is your take on this deal that Netflix made with Comcast? It seems, relative to this question of net neutrality, what can you tell us about this Netflix-Comcast deal? I mean, is this something that really has an implication for net neutrality? I mean, I know it's been reported in multiple different ways. Give us your take on this.
Well, so the Netflix-Comcast deal, first of all, I think the main issue here is this, that we know so little about it. This is a deal about how Netflix's network connects with Comcast and in order to get Netflix data over Comcast pipes in order to get the Comcast subscribers who are trying to access Netflix. And there's just not much information about what's in this deal, what was happening with Netflix's traffic before this deal happened that gave Netflix the incentive to reach this deal. And there's a big concern there, because it seems like we were seeing reports from Comcast customers saying that their Netflix traffic was buffering and it wasn't streaming as well as it usually does. And one concern that's being floated is, so was Netflix intentionally not upgrading its equipment in order to handle the larger amount of traffic that was coming from Netflix in order to give itself more leverage over Netflix in order to demand payment or some other advantageous term from Netflix? And, you know, that's a big problem. You know, if we have ISPs that have an incentive to actually degrade the service that they're giving customers, like end users, real people, in order to give themselves more leverage over other companies. So that's the main concern here, I think. But we really have so little information about what's actually in this deal and what actually happened. So we think that, like the FCC or perhaps other agencies, should be looking into this and try to figure out what's going on.
And so what would that look like? I mean, if the FCC was to sort of investigate that deal, could they simply say we want to see the terms of that deal, or what would that actually look like?
Well, they could, it could happen in multiple ways, since, you know, Comcast is now asking for permission to buy Time Warner Cable, which will give it even more leverage over content providers like Netflix or content distributors. The FCC could inquire into it as part of that process, saying we need to know this information in order to figure out whether this merger is going to serve the public interest. They could also just say in general, you know, these interconnection agreements, whether they're what's called peering agreements or transit agreements, are something that's increasingly affecting the end user experience, and therefore it's something we're concerned about, and we're just going to open an inquiry into it or start requiring information from companies, possibly not necessarily that the documents would be public, but that they would be submitted under some sort of confidentiality restriction. But in some way, the FCC could find information about the deals that would at least allow it to inform its policy decisions about things like achieving an open internet or allowing these giant cable companies to merge.
Well, so lastly, what is give us a time frame? I mean, what both on the Time Warner Comcast deal and on the sort of the development of a new regime to promote the open internet. What are the timelines for those two things?
So for Comcast Time Warner Cable, I think generally people are expecting that Comcast will submit an application to the FCC at the end of March. At some point after that, probably relatively soon after that, the FCC will then in turn put that application out publicly and solicit public comment. Sometimes when it comes to these mergers, the FCC will use an internal 180-day shot clock. That's not required by the law, so it may or may not use that shot clock, and if it does, it may or may not meet it. It's just kind of an internal practice that it likes to put itself to the test too sometimes, but it's not necessarily a definite deadline that we'll expect to get a response by. And for the net neutrality side of things, the FCC has put out this public notice asking for comment. They didn't give a hard deadline, but they said that responses would be useful by, I think it was February 20th or 21st, around there. Once they have those comments and maybe any other subsequent comments that trickle in over the few weeks after that, I think that we'll see some sort of new proceeding opened where the FCC will use the information that it got from all the public comments this month or next month, and we'll try to figure out what their way going forward is, and maybe they'll open up a new proceeding for a notice of proposed rulemaking or a notice of inquiry and start giving people a better idea of what their plan might be and soliciting more comments on that specifically.
Jody Griffin, Public Knowledge at publicknowledge.org. Thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you.
All right, folks. Now you know. Now you know. So before Comcast shuts us down and starts to block our access to you, well, I guess we don't have Comcast here, do we? But who knows? Maybe they'll buy out RCN.
What do we have here? We got Time Warner, RCN, and some places have Fios. So that's pretty
much. No, I'm saying in this office.
Oh, in this office. No, I'm just talking about in the New York City area. Those are the three players.
That's right.
And RCN's pretty tiny compared to the other two.
That's right. You can become a member of this program before that happens by going to majority.fm and signing up. 33 cents a day, folks. Keeps the show going, and more members we get, the better we can job we can do. We won't have we had a little drop off on the phone there, and I don't know exactly what the solution is to that, getting a real phone system and tying it into the board, I guess. Still having problems doing that, you can also support this program by going to majoritycickback.com. click on the Amazon link there. If you buy crap through Amazon, buy it through that link. You just got to bookmark that link. Always use it as your Amazon. You will notice no difference. We get a kickback. JustCoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. 10% coupon code majority. Also, go to the support the show page on majority.fm. You can donate your account. We post stuff on Facebook, on Twitter, via your account automatically once a week, once a day, once a month. You choose. Helps us spread the word. Give us a review on iTunes. Get the app, majorityapp.com. Go into an Apple store. Go into a, a Verizon store or an AT&T store. Or what else we got? T-Mobile store. And put the app. Works both on Android and on iOS. Put the app on all the phones in the store. It's a fun thing to do. Tell your friends about it. MajorityApp.com. All right, folks, 646-257-3920. We've got a lot of stuff to go over in the funner half. We got that Eugene Merman petition. We got that Scotty Brown thing.
Good, good.
We got, the Exxon, the CEO of Exxon, who's become this rabid anti-fracking advocate.
Anti-progress, anti-market kind of a guy.
Yeah, but local. He's very local. He's acting locally and then thinking something the opposite globally. That's
acting
the one.
Locally, harming globally?
Yes, there you go. Acting locally and harming globally. We will also talk about Chris Christie's numbers.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye. And this example of why it's about time President Obama dropped the CPI, the cuts to Social Security, in his or will in his 2015 budget. And also, good news, the TPP definitely not happening, at least for now.
Goodbye.
Not only is there no fast-track authority, maybe because of that, because it's quite clear there's not going to be any fast-track authority, at least until after the elections, the talks on the deal itself have sort of fallen apart. I'm not sad about that. We will talk about all that and more. Take your phone calls. Take your IMs in just a moment. 646-257-3920 is the number. 646-257-3920. Of course, you can IM the show via the app if you want, or through AOL or any other IM thing, client at Majority FM. On the app, you just got to press a button. You don't even have to think. I guess you got to just come up with your own user handle, but it doesn't matter. Whatever you want. Some people just use a letter. Some people use a whole string of letters. Some people use a profane name just to make me say it on air. All of those are an option for you now. MajorityApp.com. All right, folks. See you in a minute.